most of you, maybe all of you, know that Wendy Johnson is our guest speaker today. I've known Wendy longer than I've known anyone else in this room, by a goodly margin. We've been good friends and Dharma sisters for 25 years, and she came out to Minnesota, and we did an entire Ango together at Hokyoji under Katagiri Roshi. Wendy is a person of, I think, who cares so much about every living thing, including the things that might not otherwise be seen as living on the planet, that it has led to deep insight. I think it's on the wings of caring about everything that she has a deep insight about the plant world. Anyone who's seen her book knows that, and about the people world. And I found that the very first year we met, she was the first person in the Zen world who understood that I have a playful or silly center in my brain that's well oxygenated. I was very serious. Everybody thought I was 100% serious until Wendy came along. And at the end of that first Ango we did together, we were doing skits and kicking up our heels and singing silly songs, and we've been doing it ever since. So in all these years, Wendy's been a Zen practitioner and become a Dharma teacher and a longtime environmental activist, a great writer of one of the fine garden and human life gardening book that we know as Gardening at the Dragon's Gate, and leads Dharma retreats and teaches now organic farming and gardening at the College of Marin in Nevada, is developing a program there. She develops programs and sows flowers and gardeners wherever she goes, along with Zen people. So welcome.
Thank you.
Well, let me just say also that after Wendy always has a very, there'll no doubt be discussion during this talk, but also as we've been doing with guest teachers, afterwards, if six or eight people want to sit down and just quietly talk and have a cup of tea, we've set that up, and so there'll be a small gathering outside for that as well.
Thank you. It's really wonderful to be here. Thank you very much, everyone. I'm happy that my partner of many years, Peter, is here too on the side. Makes me feel very, very strong feeling, and serious on the surface, but underneath, wild, and it showed right away. Zen practice too, serious on the surface, a kind of veneer that may sometimes separate us from the wilder, more playful, and dangerous side of practice. And I feel called, especially today, to try to access with you that the side of meditation practice, of Zen practice, not even side, the nature of meditation practice, Zen practice, that is alive under the surface and wanting to come up and resurrect. Live again. Live fresh, live new. And it takes a place like this place to be able to have this kind of conversation. But it's such an important, essential conversation to be having now. I notice I have a lot of feeling around this topic, and I don't often find a way to access the questions, the deepest questions. Drawing on my training and my groundwork, my root system, explicitly drawing on it. So I count this as a treasure today, this sacred day, to be able to talk together. And not only sacred because it's Easter Sunday, the sacred every day, the deepest questions, but bringing them up today with you. And for me, a primary question is, as a layperson and a practitioner of three decades or more, close to four decades now, living and working in the world, how do I express and draw on my training without hiding behind it or referencing too much that training? How in everyday life and in the everyday world of coming and going do we bring up what matters most and find the exact vernacular, direct way to speak? So that's what I've been thinking about ever since Tisho invited me to come here. And right away when she said, would you come and speak, and it looked like it would be April 4th, close to Buddha's birthday, as we've celebrated for decades, you know, on April 8th, celebrating the birth of the baby Buddha, which is coexistent with the birth of flowers coming up out of the ground. So I thought, oh, it's close to Buddha's birthday, Hana Matsuri, the festival of the flowers. And Easter Sunday, Passover, festivals of freedom and mystery. How in this context do we speak together? And I celebrated knowing it would be in this time. April is the cruelest month, gritting lilacs out of the dead ground. I thought, good. Then we'll go down into that dead ground and see what comes up. And ask the flowers to accompany us. So more than 10 years ago, in this season, in the spring season, and with Tisho, a number of us met at Spirit Rock Meditation Center, Western teachers, Western practitioners of the Dharma. And our call together, coming together, the call was, how do we work in our Western training and Western context, how do we bring forth Dharma teaching and make it sing according to our training? So we met for a couple of days, and we had the immense pleasure and honor of working with His Holiness the Dalai Lama and also with Mahagosananda, two great teachers. I remember them meeting in our midst, we circling them, concentric circles, very much like the petals around the inner chalice of the flower, circling these great teachers, and His Holiness bowing to Mahagosananda, and Mahagosananda protesting and bowing to His Holiness, lower, 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 ground, on the ground, touching foreheads to each other. A beautiful picture of them touching foreheads, meeting. And then when it was time for His Holiness to speak, he said, what matters most is access the original teachings of the Buddha and make them available in whatever way you can. And people asked him esoteric questions about the intricacies of Tibetan Buddhism, meeting Zen, meeting Vipassana, all of, I don't care. He said, just find a way to bring up the essential point, the original teachings. And I think of that word original, and remember poet and Dharma sister Jane Hirschfield reminding us that the word original comes from an old verb in Latin, orere, to rise, or origo, which means the rising, in the sense of the sun and the moon rising and cycling, and then in the sense of springs coming up out of the ground. Continuous flow, continuous rising. So how do we, as practitioners, students of the way, access and speak in accordance with the origin of what is and stay very close to the muscle of the questions? For me, the Bridge of Flowers is a living bridge and not symbolic, not metaphorical, a living expression, a living vein of access. So let's go down into the world of flowers, shall we, a little bit? When I think of teachings, and this is a question for me as a layperson, I'm somewhat incognito. Undercover and out of cover too. Whenever I teach, it's well known I have 30 years, 40 years of training in the Zen tradition, and that I am entrusted to offer my insight and experience. And yet, what is the language? How do you do that, especially in community college, when you're teaching a class in the practices and principles of establishing an organic farm? But you know, it's possible. And if it isn't possible, something's missing in the depth and truth of the tradition for me. So it's possible without being too orthodox. It's possible to speak truth, the truth as we know it. So for me, I think of the primary teachings, of the Buddha, the three marks, that all existence is marked by suffering or anguish, a kind of narrowness as we look at the world. A narrowness, suffering. There is suffering in the life of the world. And the world is marked with that recognition. And the world is marked or sealed with a recognition that everything we love is of the nature to come apart and change. So marked with impermanence and marked with a sense of the greater self or lack of independent, persistent, eternal self. Now, how do you speak that? How do you speak that in ordinary language, using petals or drawing on petals and roots? This is a question for me. So, right away, I think of one of my favorite cases from the Blue Cliff Record. From the very first time I heard this case, the 41st case, I was quite a young woman just beginning to practice. And it's a story of Nan Xuan being encountering a very enthusiastic officer saying, "I have read the most," I'm extemporaneously speaking because that's how it comes through, "I have read the most wonderful treatise that the world, the earth, and I are of one body and one true nature, one root. Isn't that marvelous? Isn't that marvelous?" And the teacher, student of the great horse master, who didn't use or write down language, the student looked at the officer, Nan Xuan looked at the officer, and then pointed across the garden to a bed of peonies. And he said, "People these days see flowers as in a dream." And that's the case. It's that simple. People these days actually see this flower as in a dream. This flower, this particular peony, as in a dream. And when I first heard this case, right away what came up for me is the call to wake up and to really see a flower, to meet the living garden not as in a dream, or as an expression of Zen, or have the Buddha hold up a flower and have that be anything other than a direct meeting or confrontation or experience that has to be accessed. A call to wake up, holding a flower in front of an assembly, 1,200 seated, quiet practitioners, and one smiled and saw the flower, really. So how is it that we wake up and come across? People these days see this flower as in a dream. Years ago at Green Gulch Farm Zen Center, every January, we closed the gates to the place and had a deep retreat with the residents in the early days. And one retreat season, a woman who taught pantomime came, and she watched us for a day before working with us, and she said, "You are so wooden and so routinized. Can you actually switch and drop down?" And she would clap her hands and say, "Switch." And it really helped us drop down. So I think of this koan, Nan Xuan's flower in a dream, as a call to switch and drop down. and really open to suffering in the world. Wake up from the dream. Wake up from the dream. And for me, a flower is a wake-up call to see a flower really, not as anything other than a pure expression of the mystery. So to wake up from a dream and come close to suffering, to narrowness or anguish, angustifolia, the narrow leaves, angusto, narrowness, anguish, compression. Come close to that narrowness and stand in it and feel it, especially in this season. How do we do that? I immediately remember my friend Kay Hollingshead, who came to Green Gulch after her husband died. Her husband was a Zen practitioner and a painter, an extraordinary painter. He painted very erotic pictures of flowers and Buddhas all mixed together. And they were large. And Suzuki Roshi enjoyed them and allowed us to hang them in the front entryway of the Zen Center, something that as soon as Suzuki Roshi died, the paintings went away. Don't even know where they are. He was a powerful person. He died of cancer. He was about 20 years her senior, maybe more. She was also a painter, and her life was completely broken open. She came to Green Gulch and thought, well, I'm at Green Gulch, I'll sit in the Zendo. And so she sat day after day after day in the Zendo till she became a shadow of her shadowy self. And at some point, she realized that she was like a dead person, too. He was dead, but she wasn't dead. So she came down to the garden. Now, she's a painter, not a gardener. And she sat in the garden, just in the sun. I remember she just sat in the sun with her head back. And a couple of times I'd find her behind the garden bench asleep on the ground by the morning bride, Scabious, where the lady's mantle grew across the pathway. And after a few days of this, I gave her my secateurs and said, why don't you pick some flowers? And so she didn't know much about doing that. I gave her a bucket and free rein and said, make an arrangement for the meditation hall. Here's a vase. She's a painter. And she was looking at the flowers. So she did. She spent the morning harvesting. And she cut the most unlikely flowers, first very tentatively, by the end of the day, an arrangement larger than I am. I thought, well, that's going to be nice. And then she said, oh, usually there's a slender stalk of grass. And an altar to emptiness. Thinking, oh, well, you say this large flower arrangement is not emptiness? It is massively and preposterously empty. So she cut into her grief. She cut into the narrowness of her life. And with the track of flowers came across some kind of a bridge. The arrangement was incredible. It's not suggested that thorns be on the altar, or that fragrant flowers be on the altar, or that any of the aphrodisiacs, such as garlic or any of the stimulating plants, be on the altar. And usually you work with more muted colors. She had every color in the rainbow and under the rainbow, and every color before the rainbow, bowed over the earth, connecting heaven and earth. She had them all, and they were mixed together. And there were thorns and split open fruit and this extraordinary arrangement. And this was years ago, before it was stylish and hip to arrange like that. This was animal arrangement. This was grief speaking in the language of flowers. sure and open world, here I stand. And she carried the arrangement into the meditation hall and put it on the altar. There was a lot of questioning of me as the so-called head gardener. That arrangement is, it's rather, it's hard to offer incense. I said, well, you know what? That arrangement is incense. There's no need for incense this week. And at night, I went into the hall and just stood and looked. Woke up from a dream of what flowers are. Came into a very strong world. Suffering and delight mixed together in a broken stutter of the flowers. I remembered the story of the beautiful courtesan Ambavali, who was a courtesan. She was a consort to King Bimbisara, and she bore him an illegitimate son. And despaired because she was extraordinarily beautiful and no one would look at her. Either they would ignore her or look at her with incredible desire and lust. She couldn't find a way to connect. And there's a beautiful story of her going to meet the Buddha. And she says, he looked at me as one looks at the flowers. Took in all that she was and just looked at her and listened. And her suffering became accessible in a way that was useful. That's what I felt looking at this flower arrangement that Kay did. The access to suffering through beauty was an amazing experience for me. And I studied her work. I was extremely jealous. But so completely overdone by her that it was, and I'm playing a little bit. There's a kind of recognition of truth, seeing truth. And seeing, as the Buddha taught, seeing the suffering of suffering, just raw suffering. And seeing the next level down in the flowers, looking through the flowers, seeing the suffering of change, that everything changes, that a great artist is snatched away, that you stand alone, that everything has changed. And then seeing the last ring that Buddha calls on us to see the pervasiveness of suffering or the pervasiveness of anguish. Not in a depressed or depraved or broken way, but just taking it in, seeing it, waking up from the dream, being there for it. Right there in the muscle of it, pervading. And then the joy coming up in the beauty and in the transiency of the beauty. And that the Buddha would get to look down on that instead of that thin, delicate flower that he had to look at every week. Poor Buddha. And then following the thread of the flowers, following it as a hungry Dharma student does, take me down more, lower, closer, closer to what is, following the flowers. And remembering Luther Burbank of your community. Years ago, our teacher Harry Roberts told us years ago when he was first developing the Santa Rosa plum, he went through the orchards when they were in full flower, the original orchards, not far from here, and with a cane pointed. He went through hundreds and hundreds of trees, and with a cane pointed out about 30 trees from which the breeding was done. What did he see? Maybe any 30 trees, but I don't think so. You see into and across the membranes, across the dream, to the waking truth. And, you know, in that seeing old stories coming up, where does the rain come from? A monk asked Yunju, where does the rain come from? A sincere question, a good question for today. It comes from your question. He answered, thank you. Thank you, said the... It was actually an officer, not a monk. Thank you. Then a long silence, and Yunju taking a step in, and where does your question come from? So just when you think you're safe, the bottom drops out. Just when you think I can take in suffering and delight at once, the bottom drops out. And it drops out by virtue of the rain or flowers or a true question or wind moving across a field. The bottom drops out and you sink down and switch and drop. And what's accessible? Well, you know, the impermanence of all that is. The old stories. When my teacher, Alan Chadwick, was at the end of his life at Green Gulch, his students from all over California would send him flowers. And he lay in a narrow little bed in room C in the Wheelwright Center. And these giant bouquets of flowers came in, and he would study them. But at one point in the spring, he said to me, could you bring me a bouquet of anemones? Or bring me, he said, won't you bring me the daughters of the wind? That's their name, the daughters of the wind. How beautiful. Daughters of the wind, or consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil and are not, but yet they're more glorious than words can say, something like that. Sorry for mutilating. Consider the lilies of the field. Consider the lilies of the field are the anemones, or the daughters of the wind. They're the wild rakvot of the Middle East. Would you bring me the daughters of the wind? So it was spring this season, and I went down and cut a bouquet of the daughters of the wind and brought them up and put them by his bedside. And he was in the late stages of prostate cancer, although prostate cancer was not in his world system to accept, but he was very much in the late stages of prostate cancer. And alone in the room, he spent hours looking at those flowers for days. He didn't want the other large bouquets to come in during that time, just the anemones. And every day we change the water. And anemones, when they crack open their flower heads, they release clouds of blue pollen. They're one of the only flowers in the plant kingdom that has blue pollen. And I remember that the edges of his linen bed sheets were dusted with blue pollen. I remember that vividly, coming in to see him and saying, shall I change this? He said, he would put up his bony hand as if to ward off the infidel that had come in. And he'd say, please, they're still releasing their secrets. 8 days till there was all the petals had fallen and just the pollen was on the sheets. And Katagiri Roshi used to say, flowers are not a decoration. They're an expression of our life, of our human life, human existence. They're not on the altar to decorate the altar. So we let them go fully to their finish 1 week in their glory and in their coming apart. So they are extraordinary teachers of impermanence. And then continuing to look, to wake up. This statement from the painter, from Georgia O'Keeffe. Nobody, listen to this. Nobody sees a flower really. Nobody sees a flower really. It is so small. We haven't time. And it takes time, like to have a true friend takes time. So I said to myself, I'll paint what I see, what a flower is to me, but I'll paint it large, and they will be surprised, and they will take time to look into it. So she picked up her brush. She met 100 flowers on the road. A living flower. Let's go deeper in.
Does it bite?
A child in fifth grade, a five-year-old child came to Green Gulch and looked into the well of this flower and asked, does it bite? It crossed the bridge. Crossed the bridge. And if we think, when we take in the Dharma seal of no separate self, then we cross the bridge into that sweeping pool of black stamen that do, in fact, bite off our life as we know it and take us down to the bottom of the world. And when the Buddha holds up a single flower, whether this is a myth or magic or apocryphal or a dream, there's transmission, there's electricity, there's connection, and there's a recognition, I am not this. This is not myself. And we cross, and I am not separate from this pool of flowers. I am not separate. No body, no single body sees a flower really. It is not possible with a separate sense to see a flower really, because we are made of each other. And please, if the Annunciation to the Virgin Mary was presented with a lily, don't make the mistake, please, of associating this beast with purity and chastity. Please don't make that mistake. This is a clear advertisement that we are sexual, sexually created, massively naughty, meant to disobey, and this is being announced. This is being announced. And the Easter lilies that have had their pollen plucked off leave in the stores and head for the ones that are covered with pollen that will stain your life with the seal of not self, no separate self. No separate self. That wet stigma in the center ancient pollen grains, 350 million years old, landing on the wet platform of life, growing down the tube into the heart of the flower, one creating the seed of continuity, one creating food. We're made of the flowers that we have allowed to lull us into a dream. And it is truly time to wake up and come across the Rainbow Bridge. Become fully awake, alert, alive human beings. The intelligence of our hands, our eyes, our hot-bloodedness is actually sourced from the flowers. An abominable mystery, says Charles Darwin, an abominable mystery, the explosion of the flowers with their encased seeds 100 million years ago at the close of the age of reptiles. We have no idea how it happened that a green world that up until then was conveyed and carried by sperm swimming through water suddenly came to land and began to grow in the heart of a flower. And everything changed. So I encourage us to remember to act our true age. We're 4 billion years old, after all. We used to be a naughty little tiny shrew rat-like being hiding on the edge of the green world until the explosion of the flowers, when we began to eat pollen, to suck the fruit that encased the seed that held the mystery, and to begin to fire off from the stored energy in the heart of a flower. So I'm sure I am expressing Zen heresy. I'm fully aware that even with all of this connectedness and reminder that we are not a self separate from this world. This world. We are not separate from that, and yet we are also not only that. We live in the presence of the paradox. People these days see this flower as a dream. And the haiku poets carry the question out. The temple bell stops, says Basho, but the sound keeps coming out of the flowers. Or we walk the roof of hell, writes Issa. We walk the roof of hell gazing at flowers. So although we know that there is no separate abode, no distinguishable place where we come from, at the same time, when the Buddha taught and passed on living transmission, the story goes that he held up a flower and there was connection or resonance or electricity connected. There was currency and commitment and lineage in a circle. And the possibility of new life. So, thank you for letting me work on this with you. Or bring up, or come out. It's coming out. Really coming out. Coming out. Out, 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 out. Pushing against the membrane, breaking through. Standing in the wind. Leave the wind to the wind and the flowers to the flowers. and be yourself. Be a fully alive, awake, ready, broken human being. I want to close with a liturgy to the flowers of spring, to the flowers that driving from our home in Muir Beach to you. Pickleweed, sky lupin, sword fern, owls, clover, skunkweed, blue-eyed grass, ethereals, spear, goldfields, tidy tips, purple needle grass, cat's paw lily, ceanothus. Snowberry, coyote bush, fetid adder's tongue, California poppy, lupin, checker bloom, red maids, soaproot, buttercup, foxtail, poison hemlock, stinging nettle, coffeeberry, columbine, trillium, leopard lily, lady fern, thimbleberry, plantain, Oregon grape, dichondra, fairy scissors, wild iris, cow parsnip, elderberry, black willow, creek dogwood, rain lily, wild cucumber, coast live oak, false Solomon seal, fiddleneck fern, milkmaids, thimbleberry, silk tassel, vanilla grass, horse nettle, forget me not. Farewell to spring. Thank you very much.